And there is a narration from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam that do not use for tayammum the soil that people may walk on it. So all these narrations are referring to the fact that, and that verse in the chapter An-Nisa, verse 43, that the soil which is used for tayammum should be a clean one.
Yes.
And at least it is disliked for the people to use a dirty soil for tayammum.
And how can we can distinguish? Is it whether it is clean or dirty? By dirty and clean, you mean ethically speaking, or no? You mean Islamically speaking?
No, I mean physically speaking.
It is touched by an impure thing.
No, I mean physically speaking, we may find soil in the alleys, in the streets. Mm-hmm. But the other point is that we may go to a clean jungle, clean desert, and find a soil which is not trodden by any person, by any animal, and find it. I mean, some people do that. They bring some clean soil from some places where no human and no animal has ever been, and it's absolutely a clean, dry soil. And in that case, they may bring it to their home and use it for, all the cases that they are in need of doing tayammum.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
And I think you also refer to this point that nowadays we have a treatment that is called soil treatment.
Yes.
And based on that, some of the illnesses...
Soil therapy.
Exactly.
Yes.
They believe that through the soil, again, dry, clean soil, they are able to remove and get rid of some of the diseases and germs and microbes. The next point is that when we are practicing tayammum, for tayammum, we touch the soil and then we rub our two hands on the forehead and on the two hands.
Yes.
On the backside of the hands. First of all, when you're touching the forehead, it doesn't mean that we need to, touch our eyes and the whole face with the soil.
Mm-hmm.
No, it is only on the forehead. Of course, for the details, the dear listeners may refer to the books of Islamic laws. So my point is that there is no touching. The eyes are not going to touch the soil. And second of all, not only that, it's been mentioned that for tayammum, if you touch the soil and there are some particles of the soil in on your hand, you are able to remove those particles as well. And the next point is that tayammum is not limited only to soil. If you do not like it, the other option is, for example, the stone or the rock. So you may have a clean
piece of stone,
and do the tayammum through that stone.
Do we have any verse or ayah of the Holy Quran referring to tayammum?
Verse 43 of chapter An-Nisa explicitly talks about the concept of tayammum, in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said, فَتَيَمَّمُوا صَعِيدًا طَيَّبًا. For some scenarios in which you are not able to use water for ablution, major or minor ones, then you need to do tayammum through using sa'idan soil, which is tayyib, which is pure, which is clean, free of any kind of impurity. And at the last point, let me go back to the first point that I mentioned. I repeat that some of the philosophies of the Islamic laws are mentioned in the narrations, but it doesn't mean that this is the whole philosophy. I would like to add some more points on this regard. So, for example, as I mentioned, it is true that making ablution, can help us regarding hygiene and purification of the body. But is it the whole philosophy? As I mentioned, no. There might be many other philosophies. The second point is that, even if imagine that the whole philosophy of ablution is purity of the body, which is not the case. But let's suppose that this is the case. What about the order? I mean, why do we wash the face first, and then the right hand, and then the left hand, and all the details which are there for minor ablution? The same is true for the major ablution. Yes. Okay, if it is only for purification of the body, there shouldn't be any order. There shouldn't be all these details that are mentioned for wudu, for ablution, minor ablution, for ghusl, the major ablution, and for tayammum. Why there is a kind of order to rub the face, and then the right hand and the left hand, and so on and so forth. So my point is that, of course, we do not believe that these are anti-reason. We believe that these are beyond the understanding of the human intellect. So although we may find some of the philosophies of some of the Islamic laws based on the narrations of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, they are not the only philosophies, as because I mentioned, not all the details can be discovered by today's science. Okay, so for example, fasting, according to the science, can be a tool for health. For some people, they can get
as they are doing intermittent fasting nowadays.
They can get rid of some of the diseases through fasting. But what about all the details which are mentioned in the narrations of the Ahlul Bayt about fasting? So is health the only philosophy for fasting? Of course not. We just can claim that it can be one of the philosophies for ablution. Purity of the body, cleanliness can be one of the philosophies, but it's not the only philosophy. There might be many other philosophies that we are not aware of.
Thank you much, Sheikh Karimi, for a nice elaboration. Thank you much, Sheikh Karimi. It was very kind of you. Really, I enjoyed talking to you. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Li aliyin wa husayin wa hasan. Li aliyin wa husayin wa hasan. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
More than 1 year after the Taliban returned to power, a Gallup survey has found that almost all Afghans, or 98%, rate their lives poorly enough to be considered suffering. The survey shows that the situation is getting worse for Afghans, and they have fully lost hope that their future will be any better.
Absolutely, people are suffering, especially from joblessness, poverty, insecurity, and little access to their basic rights. Their life conditions were grim even before the Taliban takeover, but recently people's hardships have become even worse. Still, we are not sure what the future holds for us.
Currently, Afghan girls and women are dealing with many difficulties, especially their struggle to get education or a job to make ends meet. Poverty has not only affected men, but also the well-being of Afghan women and children. Being relatively barred from public places makes us further desperate.
According to the survey, 9 in 10 Afghans say they find it very difficult to make ends meet. 92% of the respondents say they think it is a bad time to find a job, while 86% say they have been unable to buy themselves food.
Making ends meet has become very difficult. We need to skip some meals to survive. The arrival of the cold season is adding to the people's suffering. With no job and relief assistance, you can imagine how disastrous people's lives can become.
I'm the sole breadwinner of my 8-member family. Sometimes I can put food on the table, but sometimes we go to bed hungry. The situation is so difficult that sometimes we can't even buy ourselves some oil. Having heating or other necessities is becoming almost impossible.
The Gallup survey also reveals that the unpopularity of the American leadership has risen to a record 84% among Afghans. Meanwhile, the poll shows more and more Afghans are looking favorably towards Iran, as the neighboring country's popularity is on the rise. Afghanistan is rated as the most suffering and unhappiest country in the world. Many here believe the current situation is a direct result of the U.S. occupation and war in the country. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Russian prisoners of war being executed by Ukrainian soldiers. Multiple videos have been released on Ukrainian Telegram channels. The most recent shows 11 Russian soldiers shot in the head after being detained. While both sides accuse each other of war crimes, Kiev is openly flaunting the crimes committed at the hands of its troops. At a press conference in Lugansk, a Russian soldier, Dmitry, recounts what happened when he was captured on the front line.
They ordered me to lie down, hands behind my back. One of them came up to me and hit my back with the handle of his machine gun. They put a bag on my head and waited for their commanders. In some time, the commander came, took the bag off my head, took me by the throat and started to cut my left hand with a knife. It's still functioning badly. He hit me in the teeth. And afterwards, when they took my machine gun from the vehicle, he asked if it was charged. I answered that it wasn't. He took the cartridge from it, clicked it, pointed at my leg and clicked. Nothing happened, because it was really not charged. He said I was lucky.
On the screen, gruesome images. Russian authorities say they have evidence of torture and a lack of provision of basic medical care, leading to unnecessary death.
Now, many of these atrocities are being ignored by media outlets in NATO countries, but Russian journalists, of course, are here transmitting to a Russian audience, which means large parts of the Russian population are becoming increasingly angry at Ukraine and its NATO backers for atrocities committed against Russian soldiers.
The videos that show Russian prisoners of war being essentially murdered after they've surrendered have been posted by Ukrainian soldiers. These are videos taken by Ukrainian soldiers and then posted on the internet. Essentially as a point of pride, in the belief that they are somehow another frightening or horrifying the Russians, who knows. But I also think there's another sinister dimension to this. I think there's an interest in Ukraine, particularly in Kiev or Kyiv, to ensure that there can be no negotiated settlement between Ukraine and Russia, not so much because of people in Kiev that might be willing to talk, but I think there's growing fear that Washington will ultimately abandon them.
As Russia continues to destroy energy infrastructure and kill Ukrainian soldiers on the front lines in Donbass, and as Ukraine continues to shell civilians in Donetsk and release videos of its war crimes, anger is reaching new heights on both sides, making peace an even more distant prospect. Johnny Miller, Donbass.
The repercussions of the war in Yemen and the difficult economic conditions continue to take a heavy toll on Yemeni patients. Yemen's Ministry of Public Health and Population held a press conference to shed light on the impact of the continued Saudi siege on thalassemia patients. Those suffering from this disease need to get blood transfusions every 3 weeks and must stay on medication for life.
Our main concern is the lack of medicines for thalassemia patients. These medicines, if available, are very expensive in addition to the lack of necessary medical examinations. We have 20,000 registered patients, while the real numbers are many times higher. These children need special medical care, and we hope that international organizations will stand by them by providing them with what they need.
The Yemeni Health Ministry has recorded nearly 500 deaths due to the lack of only one of the drugs used to treat thalassemia. The ones grappling with the disease seem to be losing hope as time goes by. With their health constantly deteriorating, they are desperately asking for help from international organizations, including the UN.
We suffer a lot from thalassemia. Medicines are not available. We need expensive medicines such as growth injections. We also suffer from a shortage of blood donors, which is what we need continuously.
We greatly need to be provided with important medicines that have not been available since the beginning of the war, such as iron withdrawal treatments. Because our iron level is high due to frequent blood transfusions, which also causes frequent infections.
Saudi Arabia's siege on Yemen and the ensuing shortages of food and medicine is putting more lives at risk every day. The healthcare system is feeling a massive strain, and the international community has yet to take any definitive steps towards ending the crisis here. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
The Italian government has been authorized to send, when it sees fit, military assets, materials and equipment to Ukraine until December 31st next year. The go-ahead has arrived from Italy's lower house, the Chamber of Deputies, which has passed a motion presented by the right-leaning parties backing the government coalition and supported by some opposition groups, including centre-left Democratic Party and centrist Italia Viva Azione. Italy has so far classified the arms it has been sending to Ukraine, but some media have suggested the next package will likely include air and missile defense.
9 months after the start of the conflict, sending weapons to Ukraine is no longer the way to go. We must put peace talks on the table and work all together for a UN-backed peace conference promoted by the EU.
Support for Ukraine has been a contentious issue within the ruling coalition, with Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni positioning herself as a staunch supporter of Kiev. However, her partners Matteo Salvini and Silvio Berlusconi, respectively leaders of the League and Forza Italia parties, have been so far much more ambiguous due to their historical ties with Moscow and President Vladimir Putin. The two have repeatedly stressed the urgency of stepping up efforts to promote peace negotiations.
Giorgia Meloni is firmly and strongly linked or attached to the partnership and the alliance with the United States and with NATO. So I don't think she will do something to promote compromises or peaceful or diplomatic solution.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg has recently said, quote, "The Western alliance intends to keep fighting for Ukraine until it wins back all the territory Russia has seized since 2014. However, there seems to be an open wedge between the parliament and the Italian people. Latest polls show that more than half of Italians advocate for peace negotiations between Russia and Ukraine, and only a third are okay with a country sending more weapons to Kiev.
Peace talks must be started now. They have to find a solution to end this war. This situation is dangerously taking us toward a brink.
We are being run by governments of weaklings in the pocket of NATO, and the Meloni government is no different. Our constitution clearly says Italy rejects war.
It's not anymore a war between Russia and Ukraine. It's about all of us. We begin to feel exhausted.
The approval of the motion in the lower house on supplying weapons to Ukraine also included a provision which increases military spending to 2% of GDP by 2028, as required by NATO. The motion is currently under discussion at the upper house. The Senate will have the final say on the matter. Max Civili, Rome.
Pakistan has hosted a dialogue platform for the OIC member states to boost cooperation among them in the field of science and technology. Senior officials representing Iran, Kazakhstan, Tunisia, Qatar, Malaysia, Indonesia, and Pakistan attended the meeting, while Saudi Arabia, Morocco, Turkey, Azerbaijan, United Arab Emirates, and Cameroon participated via video conference. The first senior officials meeting of the OIC Forum was aimed at strengthening scientific cooperation and to encouraging major technological initiatives.
This forum provides us opportunities of bilateral, multilateral cooperation. So one or two or several countries can work together. With Iran, of course, we have a very strong cultural, historical and scientific collaboration. And of course, Pakistan and Iran can work together.
Iran's Deputy Science Minister Peyman Salehi told the meeting that OIC was established to strengthen unity and collaboration among Islamic countries. He offered the participants Iran's cooperation in the field of science and technology.
This collaboration between 15 countries may have a very fruitful outcome in near future. Therefore, we arrange for the first meeting of ministers that will be held, I think, about 4 to 6 months later.
The Iranian minister further said that despite the sanctions imposed by the West, Iran is self-sufficient in the field of science and technology and has invested big in its infrastructure and commercialization of technology.
In 2021, Iranian scientists published about 78,000 papers, peer-reviewed papers in international journals, and at the moment we are in the rank 15 in the world. We have established about 50 science and technology parks in Iran, more than 240 incubators, and so on.
Participants in the meeting discussed in detail the objectives, terms of reference, and working procedures of the OIC 15 and recommended them for adoption by the ministerial committee, which is scheduled to be held in the near future. The presence of Iranian officials in the OIC meeting shows that Iran is not dependent on the East or the West, and it's ready to boost its political and scientific cooperation with various countries across the globe. Nasser Kazmi in Islamabad.
South Korea's container and cement truck drivers are out in the cold, on strike with no extension to an agreement they say ensures safe cargo transportation and livable incomes. The union also wants tanker trucks, auto carriers, and delivery vehicles included in their deal. The strike action has widened to Seoul Metro Subway, with other transportation workers also threatening walkouts.
Believing in the government's commitment to the constitution and expansion of the safe freight system, we held off the strike and waited. But the system expires in a month, and the government's promise has not been kept. So we had no choice but to bring out our last card, the strike card.
Slowdown in construction and cargo delivery has already caused hundreds of millions in damages each day, with 5,000 truckers off the job. The slowdowns are rippling through South Korea's export-led economy as the strike enters its second week. President Yoon Suk-yeol this week ordered cement truck drivers back to work, with construction companies reporting losses into the tens of millions of dollars.
The foundation of our industries is in danger of being devastated. Even people's daily lives are being threatened. There is no way to justify the act of taking the lives of people and the national economy hostage to accomplish their own interest.
The Yoon administration has vowed to deal sternly with the illegal strike action.
The truckers were on strike just 5 months ago, but that strike only ended with the extension of the safe trucking freight rate system through the end of this year. with the government's back-to-work order, the truckers are threatened with fines and even jail sentences for those refusing to get back behind the wheel. Frank Smith, WeWang, South Korea.
Yemen is on the road to achieving self-sufficiency, with government plans and strategies aimed at doubling and expanding Yemeni agriculture and local food production. On this trip to a Yemeni farmland, I am accompanied by Wajih Al-Mutawakkil. The man is in charge of vegetable production in Yemen. Al-Mutawakkil is one of the government officials leading the campaign to revive Yemen's rich agriculture. He is here to show us the agricultural projects the government is funding.
We are now on the outskirts of Sana'a, right behind Sana'a International Airport, and beyond this point is where Yemen's agricultural renaissance is beginning to take place. Here, there's farmers that are planting crops such as garlic, onions, barley, and wheat. And these are crops that are vital to keeping the Yemeni economy afloat and keeping Yemenis from going hungry during this strangling economic blockade imposed by Saudi Arabia.
One of the ways to counter food shortage in Yemen is through the launch of water-based greenhouse projects.
These are the greenhouse projects we launched. There are about 8 on this farm. These are water-based greenhouse, which means we plant crops using gravel instead of soil. This gravel is extracted from the Yemeni mountains. This greenhouse project is made up of organic natural materials found only in Yemen.
Outside of these gas houses is an even more vital crop being harvested in acres of land that stretch beyond the horizon. Yemeni wheat. According to the Ministry of Agriculture, Yemen imports an estimated 4 million tons of wheat a year from foreign countries. To achieve self-sufficiency status, Yemen must produce its own wheat in order to eliminate its dependency on foreign imports. Farmers on the outskirts of the Yemeni capital are answering the call to produce more wheat.
This portion of the wheat is ready to be reaped, while the rest of the field is going to take another week to a week and a half before it is ready.
I like to take the wheat and grind it with my hands. Then I blow away the flax, and now it's ready for consumption.
As food production increases, many organizations have been formed to help achieve food security. Huan Foundation for Development in Agriculture is one of them. Huan Foundation educates Yemenis on the importance of helping the advance of the nation through agricultural initiatives. Huan also specializes in the production of basic foods from a combination of Yemeni seeds and grains at their local factory. They have even started their own brand of flour and healthy snacks sold in and out of the country. Huan's president believes that Yemen's high-quality agriculture must be revived in order to provide healthy food options for Yemenis and to eradicate some of the diseases caused by imported foods.
International organizations are playing and have played a large role in destroying Yemeni agriculture. They did so by exporting grain and wheat to us, which is often rotten and contains harmful substances like chemicals. Additionally, these grain shipments that enter Yemen have passed their expiration date, which results in a lot of illnesses.
After the revolution of September 21st in 2014, achieving self-sufficiency in Yemen is no longer an impossible task. According to Yemen's Ministry of Agriculture, if local food production continues to increase, Yemen could reach food security in just a few years. The revolution against Western hegemony in Yemen was a starting point towards achieving self-sufficiency, which according to the Ansarullah leader is essential in order to secure food provisions for Yemenis. Yusuf Maudi, the outskirts of the Yemeni capital.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Experts in the U.S. have warned that they are deeply concerned that the Biden administration is minimizing COVID at a time when it needs to be redoubling its efforts to ensure funding and resources to prevent another surge. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of Common Dreams wrote, refuting President Joe Biden's recent claim that the pandemic is over, a group of physicians, epidemiologists, and other experts warned in an open letter published recently that COVID-19 remains a deadly and disabling threat, including in the United States of America, which is ill-prepared for a possible winter surge fueled by the emergence of new Omicron strains. We know from our clinical and research experience that the pandemic is far from over, and that national efforts to secure the health and well-being of the American public are far from complete, the scholars wrote in the esteemed British Medical Journal, adding, "We are deeply concerned that the Biden administration is minimizing COVID at a time when it needs to be redoubling its efforts to ensure funding and resources to prevent another surge. The U.S. hasn't put in the effort needed to move into a new phase with confidence," states the letter, adding, "Booster coverage, even among older Americans, is abysmal. With only half of vaccinated adults having received a booster, this places the U.S. 73rd globally for booster coverage. Fewer than 6% of immunocompromised Americans, a group that accounted for nearly 1 in 5 hospital admissions during the BA2 surge, have received Evolshot, a therapy to help prevent COVID-19. To make matters worse, just 4% of eligible Americans have so far received the new bivalent booster tailored to protect against the dominant subvariant. Recent polling found that over half of fully vaccinated adults don't know they are eligible for the shot, and less than one-third say they plan to get their fourth vaccine dose as soon as possible. Rampant right-wing anti-science campaigns have played a significant role, to be sure, but so too has the nation's for-profit healthcare model, as well as efforts to normalize the ongoing dangers posed by the continuously mutating coronavirus. Soon after Biden downplayed the pandemic in his 60 Minutes interview, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, announced that masking will no longer be universally required in healthcare facilities and nursing homes. If Biden's recent comment indicates that the administration is positioned to pull back further pandemic mitigation, the public health experts warned recently, the U.S. will be preparing for a major storm without even an umbrella in hand. They wrote, pandemics do not end with a flip of a switch, adding, despite the widespread belief that the pandemic is over, death and disruption continue. As Americans embrace what McKinsey and Company has called individual endemicity, in which people let their risk tolerance dictate the preventive measures they take, transmission rates remain at dangerous levels in nearly every county of the U.S. throughout the summer. The U.S. recorded approximately 3,000 deaths per week, at least the equivalent of a 9/11's worth of deaths each week, and often more. The Delta and Omicron surges took 350,000 American lives in 7 months, almost seven times as many fatalities as claimed by the most severe flu season in years. In early September 2022, COVID-19 was the second leading cause of death in the United States, claiming more lives than stroke and common cancers. Beyond its outsized death toll, COVID-19 is leaving many Americans in diminished health and with less economic security. More than 7% of Americans report experiencing protracted post-COVID symptoms. Recent estimates suggest long COVID has forced at least 500,000 people out of the workplace. The continuing impact of the pandemic is particularly devastating given its unequal burden on communities of color and socioeconomically vulnerable populations, who are less likely to have private insurance to cover prevention, testing, and treatment costs. The U.S. is in a different position than it was when the pandemic first emerged, thanks to the increased availability of vaccines, tests, and treatments made possible by robust funding. But the money underpinning the free provision of those medical tools is rapidly disappearing, leading to what Adam Gaffney, an assistant professor of medicine at Harvard University and pulmonary and intensive care unit doctor, calls the rationing of COVID care by ability to pay. While Biden has repeatedly asked Congress to authorize billions of dollars in additional spending to address COVID-19 and monkeypox, including resources that would be directed toward international efforts, lawmakers led by Senator and the Republicans have refused for months to allocate new money. The president's premature assertion about the end of the pandemic, meanwhile, has only bolstered right-wing demands for austerity, and the continuing resolution passed recently excluded funding for both infectious disease outbreaks. Earlier this year, the White House sounded the alarm about the potential coronavirus surge in the coming month that could infect up to 100 million people nationwide, resulting in a million hospitalizations and nearly 200,000 additional deaths in a worst-case scenario. people in the U.S., already home to more than 1 million of the world's COVID-19 deaths, have died at a significantly higher rate than their counterparts in other wealthy nations. For individual health care, paid sick leave, and other life-saving rights for 1 decade ago. Notably, average life expectancy in the U.S. has declined substantially over the past 2 years. The experts wrote, "We need a full court press this fall to reverse these trends and reach more of the public with boosters and antivirals." Echoing recommendations made recently by the People's CDC, the letter continues, "The U.S. must make smart investments in the future of our country's response. We need to continue prioritizing tests, masks, treatments, and ventilation. Failing to produce these resources and make them widely accessible will effectively waste the benefits of the scientific advances we have made thus far. Inadequate funding may also slow or stop our progress towards developing new and more protective nasal and pan-coronavirus vaccines and therapies." Globally, the pandemic has caused more than 15 million deaths. People in low-income countries have been deprived of equal access to life-saving COVID-19 medical tools, leaving billions of people in Africa and other parts of the global south completely unprotected. The Lancet's COVID-19 Commission declared last month that widespread failures during the COVID-19 pandemic at multiple levels worldwide have led to millions of preventable deaths and a reversal in progress towards sustainable development for many countries. Starkly unequal access to medicines, fueled by high-income nations, gobbling up disproportionate shares of jobs and therapeutics, and pharmaceutical corporations refusing to share knowledge and technology has contributed massively to avoidable suffering. It also enables the coronavirus to continue circulating and mutating, increasing the likelihood of a vaccine-resistant variant emerging. Lancet, in its recent publication about infectious diseases, wrote, "The best chance to stop this pandemic is to make vaccines available for everyone and everywhere. The efforts to provide booster doses should be balanced with the efforts to attain vaccine equity."
Start. Movement. Speed. Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam ID. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم السلام علیکم و رحمت الله و برکاته Dear listeners, sisters and brothers from all around the world, I hope you're all doing well. This is your station.
Yes!
Yeah, and we are here again. And I'm really glad that I'm here. How about you, my dear sister Asma?
Yes, I'm over exhilarated.
We are coming back to our hometown, our generation, and our beautiful connection to you. As you know, 50 years ago, many children were responsible for helping on the family, like, I don't know, going under heavy responsibility, like caring for younger siblings and, I don't know, working at a young age and so on. And as you know...
Whenever I just hear these things, I remember Charles Dickens' David Copperfield.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was thinking of that. And as you know, the responsibilities were kind of, you know, seemed heavier than today. But as you know, it seems like today the children are growing faster.
You know what? I say even right now, children are going through the same thing that children were going through 50 years ago, but the appearance has changed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm telling you that when we were younger, because time is flying and it's in such a rapid that we cannot even grasp everything that happens in each decade.
Yeah.
So I'm telling you that when I was a kid, then I had all the facilities to be a child, you know, to act like a child, to go for a different entertainment and whatever. But I also would think that maybe I have grown faster than what I should have.
So you're telling me that the cultural atmosphere is kind of putting a pressure on you to feel like that?
No, you know what I say? No. I say it depends on your personality.
Oh. If it depended on the personality, it wouldn't be that much, you know, spread it out.
Yeah. See, because there are different causes. One of them is your personality. The other one is your family. The other one is society. The other one is...
How about our strong alliance in technology?
Of course. These days? Of course. Because we have seen it right now, you know. I have two nieces. And then when I look at them, I just see, oh my God, they're not children.
Yeah, exactly. It feels like, okay, who are you? Are you, for example, 5 years old? I can't believe that. I have the same feeling about them. And I think the problem is somehow the access to whatever they want, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think they have more knowledge than they should.
But also, I would say there's another thing, you know? They don't have siblings. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
they're one, and at most, they're two. And then they have to live with plenty much of people around them that are all old. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Above 30, at least. I'm not calling all the above 30 people as old. But I'm just saying that the people that they are coping up with are all from older generation.
Yeah. I myself was from the Skana situation too.
Yeah, you understand what I say.
Yeah, exactly. Because
you know, when I was a child, I had four more of children with myself at home. So just imagine the situation. We're all children. We have different experiences. And every single one of us has to share their experiences with each other. And then we go for crimes together. And that's different.
Yeah, it is different. So I have the same situation that I will elaborate to after a short break. So then we go for a short break, then we'll come back again. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Youth Station, and we're talking about something really interesting. As you know, we feel like children are growing too fast. And at the last part, we're talking about our own experience for these kind of situations. Mm-hmm. That I just told you that I want to elaborate my own situation for you. You know, I was an only child for 10 years. And
that's a long time.
Yeah, in both, actually, family, my maternal and paternal families, I was only one child. And after 10 years, my sister came. And for 10 years, I've experienced this kind of situation that all the people around me were adults.
Yeah.
And, you know, I felt like, okay, I'm adult too. I'm an adult too. Why not me? Mm-hmm. Why can't I do this? Why can't I tell this? Why can't I, for example, participate in this decision?
Exactly. And you know, you would say something else as well. You would say that there is no way for me to do a mistake.
Exactly.
I have to be perfect.
Yeah. And this perfectionism that I have, actually, I admit that I have it, I think comes from this point that
this
family environment. But I think there is another thing which leads to maturing so fast. And this is the health environment and nutrition that we have nowadays. As you know, the hormones and the kind of industrial food that we are eating, we are using, is the problem.
Yeah. Well, I can't relate much to that point.
Because you cannot relate that because, as you know, we are facing precocious puberty in our young generation, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And the problem is the hormones that we are eating, actually.
And this is the relation between them. And these
the
hormones
foods and
the
fruits
exactly.
that we're taking in are no longer the organic things that we used to eat.
And because their body and they are changing physically to the adulthood, their minds actually exist in the childhood, they will kind of feel a kind of paradoxical content in this issue.
Exactly.
And they will act as adults.
Yeah.
This is the problem.
And, you know, I was reading something. Again, it was psychological, and it said that the children that are growing faster beyond their age and beyond their years, then when they grow up, they're going to face some traumas.
Exactly.
Likewise, like, for example, a child who has never felt like a child when he or she was a kiddo, then as they grow older, they will have this problem of being fastidious toward making decisions. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They would pick things very hardly.
And let me tell you something. Even this kind of unfortunate thing will lead to some psychological disorders. You know?
Of course.
When they grow up, because they haven't experienced the childhood that much, they will have some special tendency that are strange.
Yeah,
for example, they collect some strange things.
Exactly.
You know? Some strange collectioners in the world that we are actually watching and observing is, you know, they all have some roots in their childhood, these kind of problems.
Yeah, exactly.
And crimes.
Yeah, of
you know,
course.
Because
they
feel they lack something.
See, I would say this is the rule. When you go too extreme in everything, there comes all the problems.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So balance is something we
balance
need.
Balance is very
everything.
Good.
Everything is the key.
Now, Vita, let's talk about the role of parents in these things.
I'm not a parent.
Okay, at least you can imagine
I
that.
Really skip it. Yeah, I know. Actually, the parent rule is the most important thing, I think, in this issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you cannot tell me that, okay, because the nutrition is full of hormones, you are facing this premature end, and you cannot do anything for that. No. The most effect is effect and impact is from the family part.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things, there is a beautiful thing that I want to read to you. This intentional balance of freedom and boundaries is exactly what children need to feel like they can still act like a kid while developing a sense of independence and autonomy at an appropriate rate.
Yeah.
This is a quote from a professional
psychologist.
Yeah, a psychologist. And I think it was beautiful.
Yeah.
You have to make a balance. Sometimes the boundaries that you're putting on the children will make them and lead them to doing something that is not appropriate for their age.
Exactly. See, Vita, when we were children, I remember that there were among the relatives, you know, there were some parents who forced their children, for example, not to touch something or not to go somewhere, not to do this or not to do that. When I saw them, I just felt like, as I grew older, I understood actually that those parents were the actual hindrance in the way of their children's creativity.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For example, when I was a child, it was so hard to control my tendencies towards art. You know what I mean?
Oh.
Well, I had to play with too much of colors and painting.
So.
And then, I you know, when you have a child like that.
I thought you were a bookworm.
Yes, I was and I am.
Thank
but then, you know, art is something that I cannot forget about. So imagine you have a child like that. It is so difficult to control those children because then they would do something wrong and they would play with the mods or whatever. Dirty things, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
So being a mother.
Troublemakers.
Yeah. Being a mother, tolerating this situation is very difficult. But now when I think of my mother, I think she was very good at doing that.
You have to be patient, you know. I think
patience is a very good thing.
Yeah.
You know, then you would actually let your children grow in their creativity and grow in their manners even.
Yeah.
You know, even the fact that I told you, now you said that I was the only child in both my paternal and maternal family. So this is very difficult. But as for us, when we gathered in my grandmother's house, there were a crowd of children.
Yeah.
There was a hustle and bustle of all these children around each other. So that actually is going to help you grow better.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So even if we are parenting children that are lonely children, we have to take them to some occasions and situations in which they could meet their fellows, you know?
Yeah.
They could have this interaction with other people of their same age because that is going to help them grow in a much healthier way.
Nice one. You know, so we're going to talk more about the solutions of this problem after a short break. Stay tuned. Welcome back. This is
Youth Station.
And we are here talking about
growing faster than your early age.
Exactly. And we wanted to have some just solutions. I want you to just tell me in summary, what are your own solutions if you were a parent?
Well, I would say as a child, I would do everything that I think is proper to do. And then as a parent, I would let my child to go for whatever. See, as a child, whatever. Until the age of seven, I would say whatever.
Yeah.
But actually not whatever, like, for example, as you see nowadays, children go for breaking the TV or I don't know, they do some harsh things.
Not violent.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point. The things that are healthy and not violent, then I would let my child do that. I would try to practice being patient more and more. I would even maybe be a partner with them in all the crimes they do.
Yeah, I can imagine that. That would be a really beautiful house. I want to come.
Yes, and you're welcome. You can come anytime you like.
And, you know, I want to end this, actually, our beautiful conversation with my own experience. When I was a child, I was really interested in scissors and something, cutting the papers. Yeah, and, you know, my mother, like kind of exceptions, just allowed me to use the scissor from a young age, like 3 years old. Something, even if it exists in the danger of cutting my fingers and so on.
Yeah.
But she allowed it. And, you know, I think it really helped me to grow this kind of creativity and productivity in myself.
Of course. And now you become a doctor.
Thank you.
You can also use that scissor.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know why I like scissors. And
because you're a doctor.
I will be. And, you know, I think you have to find the balance limitation between this kind of freedom and authority that you have and you have to put on your children, you know.
Exactly.
And when you find this balance, everything will be solved.
And don't force your children into being something that they aren't. For example, you have seen it that some people force their children to go study medicine. Yeah.
Mostly medicine in... I don't know, in countries like India,
in developing
Iran.
Countries,
yeah,
you know?
Developing countries.
In developing countries, being a doctor or being the engineer or even lawyer is the final thing a parent would love their children to be.
It's the paradise. Your future will be like paradise and something, but it won't.
You found salvation. But that's not the whole truth, you know?
Exactly.
Do not force your children to be something that they aren't.
Find your talent.
Yeah. Let them be creative.
And lead them to that road.
Exactly.
They will be successful.
Don't let them be wasted.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's all. I guess that's
the
gist.
You're talking so painfully. Why?
No, I'm just talking based on experience, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's experience-based. It's like always like that, that you feel it from your bone that, okay, you have to do that. Because
exactly.
It's the right way.
Yeah.
So...
like always, time is flying so fast.
Yeah, exactly. At the end, we are human beings with limited sources, so we have to find the right way to go for our future.
And
our brilliant talents and go through that road. This is the solution. Thank you for listening to us. I hope that was...
a fruitful session for all of you.
Exactly.
Thank you very much.
Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.